Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Monday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening live to The Fan. We'll take you all the way up to 6:30 this evening. Jay Gruden's on the show in 1 hour at 3 o'clock to break down the Commanders and the Broncos. And beat reporter Ben Standing stops by after being at the stadium late last night with the latest on injuries and whether or not we'll see Jaden Daniels against the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. Danny, yesterday...
Yeah.
The losing streak did reach 7, but the Commanders played one of the more entertaining games in Week 13 in the NFL, taking the number one seed in the AFC as of this moment, the 10-2 Broncos, to overtime. They fought hard. They played a much more competitive, entertaining football game. I've got no venom. I liked everything about yesterday. There were some things we can get into that either they didn't do well or some coaching question marks or what have you, but the fact that they're now 6th in the NFL draft order, the fact that they gave the Broncos all they could handle, the fact that the offense with Terry McLaurin back looked way, 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 way better, and they did some really good things that, frankly, almost nobody else has been able to do against the number one defense in the league, the fact that the defense has made it 2 much stronger games in a row since Joe Witt lost his play-calling duties and Dan Quinn took over, things are looking up for the Burgundy and Gold as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Terry McLaurin coming back was fun to watch. Just a reminder that, you know, when healthy, when he's right, he can be pretty effective. That was really cool for him. Even on a pitch count, you could still see he was a point of emphasis for this offense. So for me, watching this game, and I recognize I'm different than everybody else. I see something that doesn't make sense to me. I can't let it go. Other people can kind of let it get lost in the sauce and watch and enjoy. Of my checklist of things that I wanted, I got a lot of them. You just mentioned it. Had they won, would have been catastrophic. They'd pick a 10th or 11th, depends on your math. I'd have to go check the latest up-to-date Tankathon-type rankings in terms of opponent win percentage, and then it's an inverse. So you would have been 10th or 11th and going in the wrong direction. There's a couple bad teams made the mistake of winning this past Sunday. But I saw a group that did show some improvement, that fought, as you said, that was probably their best overall football game of the year against a quality opponent. I was pretty impressed with both sides of the ball. They moved the ball. They were better on the ground against Denver than they'd been in months, it felt like. Defensively, they were, again, not great, because I don't think they have great. I don't think they have that gear, but they were pretty good. The things that will frustrate me forever until they're different, the amount of Zach Ertz featuring, 13 targets for an oft-injured veteran on his final year of a deal. Benson, they can't get a target, played, I think, 10 snaps, 12 snaps, 17% of snaps. They can't feature Jalen Lane. Johnny Newton is sitting there behind a bunch of aging veterans. I'm not asking for crazy stuff, by the way. Just more playing time for second-round picks from last year. And maybe if an emphasis on that. Maybe it happens as the season goes. But there was a lot of boxes checked yesterday.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things you're asking for, you'll get more of in a few weeks as we get closer to the finish line. We're still about a third of the way left in this race. You know, it's not even December 1st as they're playing that game yesterday. And there are 6 games in a 17-game schedule left. They're not going to completely just flip a switch and punt and start playing all the kids, although I wouldn't mind that. It's just not how the reality of the league works, obviously. We'll spar for the next 5 weeks over whether or not it would have been catastrophic to win the game, because I just disagree with the idea that this team that has not won in 7 games now and in 8 or 9 weeks, whatever it is, technically, you know, that them winning a game, I'll save the word catastrophic for other things, frankly. I don't think it would have been that damaging, because whether they end up picking 5th or 8th or 11th when you don't have a quarterback and the best thing to do is to trade down, I'm not sure if it's as huge a difference. I think it will be a difference, but it's not as huge a difference maybe as if they were looking for a quarterback and they needed to get as high as possible when they were taking Daniels or May or Williams when they were trying to get up to number 2. But again, we've got 5 weeks to spar over that, and I'm sure we will go round and around. But specific to last night, the product was just so much better. This is what I have been wanting, really, for many, many weeks. When you play a good football team, look like you belong. And I think the fact that they're getting healthier now is the reason for what we got to see yesterday. Let's talk offense for a moment. Terry McLaurin got 14 targets and 7 catches for 96 yards and a touchdown. And that does not even account for the 30-yard post he ran, taken on contact at the goal line to what would have been Tyre win the game early on in OT when they would come back down the field and score again on a Terry McLaurin slant. So it could have easily been 8 for like 115.
Yeah, just to add a little color to that, he only played 51% of snaps on a pitch count. Understandable, by the way, because last time they just said, okay, go play a full game, he ended up hurt and missed another month and a half. So he basically received a target on 1/3 of the snaps he was in.
Which is pretty amazing.
Which is an astounding amount.
Now, I will say 50% of snaps last night is basically a normal game's worth, because they ran 85 plays, which was the most that they have run since 2016 in the London game against the Bengals. Partially because of going to overtime, but really more accurately because they converted 8 third downs, because they went on really long drives. They did it, by the way, in the hardest way possible against the number one defense in the NFL. I said before the game, we were talking about this, it's impossible to go on these long 10, 11, 12, 13-play drives against the Broncos. If you have to do that, you will not have any chance. And they did it time and time and time again. It was a really, really incredible offensive plan by Cliff Kingsbury that worked. I know Mariota threw one egregious interception that everybody will talk about, and you're allowed to. It's one of the 85 plays, and it was a very, very heavily weighted play. It was me after Thanksgiving dinner. Having said that, he low-key cooked otherwise. I mean, he throws for almost 300 yards. He runs for 55 yards against the number one defense in the league. But you can just see the difference, Danny, when you have Terry McLaurin out there. What it does for Zach Ertz, suddenly getting more man coverage and then running some of those zone beaters where there's not as much attention paid to him on some of those deep overs where he's crossing the field, getting hit for 21 and 19 yards on a couple of big-time plays. Great throws from Mariota, layered over top of defenders. The game changes a little bit. You get an opportunity to run Deebo Samuel, who is just kind of forgotten, because when you line him out as a receiver and you run him down the field on a go ball, nobody really thinks you're targeting him. And they hit that 38-yarder down to the one-yard line because they're paying extra attention and bracketing Terry McLaurin, who's been featured throughout the second half. The offense changes. He really is truly a game-changer for them. And we've talked off and on about, like, who's the injury that killed them the most outside of Jaden Daniels? And I've mentioned Dietrich Wise, who they're, you know, couldn't set the edge after he was lost. People will bring up Austin Ekeler. The answer is obviously Terry McLaurin. You just saw it last night. They're such a different offense, and it gives you some real hope when you get Daniels back, whether that's against the Vikings or the Giants. And more importantly, let's be honest, in 2026, if you have Terry out there and you have a true legitimate threat at wide receiver, this thing's going to look very, very different.
The best way I can explain it is, or the way I thought about it, is bad defenses became very good against Washington. Now, the overall numbers weren't that horrendous, but you could see it was a very pedestrian group. Every inch was fought for. It was nuclear fusion with chopsticks, right? Where they had to negotiate everything. Every window was tighter than all hell. They couldn't run the football against terrible defenses like Chicago or Dallas or any of the others, because there was no threat. There was a threat yesterday. There was absolutely a threat, even with the great Patrick Surtain back there. That kid, by the way, is unbelievably good. My God, what a baller. What a baller he is.
Probably not that close right now. That's cornerback one.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to say. And if there's someone else great, good for him too. That guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you could see the difference. I think you said it very well. The even if you weren't going over the top, and they did a couple different times, maybe they fell in love with it to a degree because I think they were running it so well. Maybe there was more things they could have done that weren't taking shots, but they were pretty determined. They had a plan and they stuck to it. I was so impressed with that competitiveness and the ability to rally after the bye week. I know they're pros and they're supposed to be able to do that, but human nature, man, a really good team's coming to town. Your season's lost. you're terrible, everybody knows you're terrible, and everyone's making fun of you or the punchline. They stayed in that game and kept counterpunching, and there was no rollover in them, which you could easily see happening when a first-place team from the AFC comes to town with that vice-like defense. So it was impressive.
Yeah. I just, it warmed the heart to see them play a good team well. When you played the Denvers a month ago, it was 44-22. Now, it should also be acknowledged, Bo Nix is somewhat limited, watching him in person for the first time yesterday. And I think the Denver offense is a keep-you-in-the-game offense. This is how they've played every single game all year long. They are the first team in the history of the league, by the way, to trail in all 12 of their first 12 games and to have a record where they've won at least 10 times. And they constantly do this in the fourth quarter, where they steal a game from the Giants, where they beat the Colts at the horn, where they beat the Chiefs at the horn. Now they beat Washington in overtime. This is what they do. This is their game, and this is a league with tiny margins where you either make the winning play or you don't, and the team that always does Denver is 10-2, and the team that just hasn't in games like Chicago and Miami and this one, Washington, is 3-9, and instead of being 6-6 and a wild card hopeful, your season is now completely over. But credit the Broncos. They always make the winning plays. I think they are well coached. Nick shows up in the big moments when he has to. He was excellent on that five-play drive in overtime where they go right down the field for 76 yards. They finally get their first huge explosive of the game where they get Evan Engram working on Bobby Wagner. He does a little whip route, leaves Wagner in his dust, and then runs for 41 yards. But I thought we got our answer to, was this defensive improvement just about Miami, or is there something to this? There's clearly something to this.
There's something to it.
I wouldn't want to be Joe Witt right now because it looks so much better and so much different without him calling the plays. I'm not saying everything's fixed. It's not going to be fixed. They have real problems on defense that you cannot fix until the offseason. They have personnel issues. You don't have linebackers that can run with tight ends. In this league, that's a death sentence. You don't have speed in the second level of your defense. In this league, that is going to make you not very good on that side of the ball. They can't really set edges, something the Broncos, with their run game and their injury to J.K. Dobbins, weren't going to take much advantage of yesterday. Their strengths on defense are few and far between. But now you're just a professional outfit that's not going to be great on defense, which is not a crime, by the way.
Right.
There's a lot of those defenses out there.
If they had this whole year where they were middle of the pack on defense, it's a very different season.
100%.
Even with all the injuries and all the different things on offense that didn't go right.
If you play the game you played yesterday against the Vikings and Max Brosmer or J.J. McCarthy, they score in the teens and you win the game. If you play the game they played either against Miami or Denver yesterday against the Giants in a couple weeks, you probably turn Jackson Dart over a couple times. The Giants might have 20 points. And you win that football game. Like, that's the difference between yesterday and what became the norm when they were the first team in 23 years to lose by 20 or more points for a month straight.
Yeah, you can go back and look at it. If you played that way against the Falcons, I think you probably win that game. By the way, the Falcons, good heavens. But you go back and look at the Dallas game. If you played that way against Dallas, that's a good offense with good pieces, right? But maybe you're in that game. You got a chance to win it. I don't think you beat Seattle that day. I don't think you beat Detroit that day the way that they were playing. Kansas City, probably the same deal. You lose a one-score game on the road to a team with Savvy and Moxie, et cetera. But, again, it's a different season. We're talking about a far more competitive product instead of a group that got outscored by almost 100 points over a handful of weeks. You're talking about just a different team, different year. And this is just one of those, bummer, we were that close. Just a couple breaks didn't go our way. Instead of this was a meltdown. This was the worst-case scenario. Which scenario, Danny? All of them. Every single thing that could have gone wrong did, and not just kind of wrong. It went as wrong as ever been.
Ertz went off 10 for 106 on 13 targets. He was awesome. He had three plays, though, where, and this is the most Zach Ertz thing ever, where your athleticism being limited and some of I guess we just say limitations for him.
Yep.
Show up where deep down the field. Now, ball hung in the air a little too long, and then Alex Singleton made an amazing play to punch the ball out. What would have been a huge play to set up a field goal in the fourth quarter. By the way, that's Alex Singleton's story. He's an all-timer. This linebacker for the Broncos. This is the same guy, by the way, that played an entire game with a torn ACL last year. 23 days from having a mass removed and testicular cancer. He was on the field flying around last night and made maybe the play of the game defensively for the Broncos against Ertz. Then he has the play back in the end zone where he can't make the catch. He had it didn't end up mattering, but he had a play where he fell just short of the sticks again. So, like, those are those things that people that don't like the Ertz experience, which is kind of a them problem, they're going to focus on those three plays. Where I come from, when you have 10 catches for 106 yards as a tight end in the NFL, and the offense kind of goes through you, and your offense scores 26 to almost knock off one of the best defenses in the league, I'm going to tip my cap to you. But he goes for 100. McLaurin goes for 96. Debo, because of the 38-yard play, goes for 64. I like that they got Colson Yankoff involved. He's an athletic guy at the tight end position. That 14-yard catch he made was a pretty nice play. The one thing I'll say about Ertz that I didn't get is they designed this tight end screen to him that was kind of DOA, pretty obviously. That's just not a play that you should run for Ertz. That's where, if you're running a tight end screen there, just go ahead and put Ben Sinnott out there or give that to Yankoff with his speed. It's kind of what he did at UCLA. This is a guy that lined up at running back some for the Bruins in college. So I didn't really get that usage. But they ran a play from on a first and 10 to start a drive from under center with 13 personnel where they went play action, roll out, and hit Terry McLaurin for a 16-yard explosive. Be still, my beating heart.
You must have been so excited.
I mean, I just about ripped my shirt off in the press box.
There were 16 targets to tight ends, and Ben Sinnott didn't get one. I can't. Other people can, and they can move on, and they'll be able to talk about it. Or not care, and just talk about everything else. I just can't get over it.
2-3 weeks from now, I'll join you in anger. It's just not the time of the season where I'm going to go crazy about that. I don't like it. But there's a difference between endorsing it, which I'm not doing, or liking it and being angry
and my thing,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not being able to let it go.
Like, you have an axe to grind, and you, like, you've now got this thing that you're obsessing over. I'm just not going to join you there. But in 3 weeks, we'll be in the same place anyway if Ben Sinnott is still not involved.
I think that's fair. Everyone's welcome to join me, or not, or yell at me, whatever it is. Again, I'm not saying he needs 13 targets. One would be nice. Let's go crazy and get two. The little tight end screen thing you mentioned, or that rollout with 13 personnel couldn't go to him. Would have been nice. I'd love to see the second round pick play. I know that's novel and crazy for a team that's 3-9, but I digress. But overall,
speaking of second round kit picks, really quickly, I don't want to make like this grandiose comment on this because I have not gone back and watched all 22 on this. But I can't. There were at least two or three times where I noticed Johnny Newton just getting blown off the ball in the run game last night. Now, a couple of them happened in a drive where he ended up having a really nice pressure as well. But we might be at a point with him where it's kind of helping in the passing game or not helping that much because he's an undersized defensive tackle.
Yep.
There's clearly a reason why they don't play him that much. So this is something to dive in on. But he was the 36th pick in the draft. So I think your point is perfectly reasonable when you're saying, okay, guys, we're 3-9 here. There's five games to go. Johnny Newton, Ben Sinnott. There's other guys we could name.
Sure.
Like Brandon Coleman would be one of them.
Yeah, a little bit more Jordan McGee. Turn that fader up. Again, they don't have
flashed again last night.
Yeah, they don't have a ton of young pieces. So I'm not talking about, like, you know, going full, hey, Wizards, call up the G League. They don't have that. There simply aren't players that I'm really that interested in. There's a handful, and those guys don't get opportunities.
Speaking of Brandon Coleman, though, I do want to mention, I thought the O-line was awesome last night.
For sure.
In pass protection. Yeah. This is the group that has close to 20 more sacks than any other team in the NFL coming in, and you would not have known it. They had one in the game. Some of it is Mariota's decisiveness, and I do give him credit for this as a veteran quarterback. I think generally he's pretty good at setting protections. The ball comes out pretty fast, and he deserves to be respected for that. But if you look at some of the next-gen stats numbers, and I posted this at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter if you want to go find it, the Broncos got pressure 17% of the time, which was their lowest pressure rate since Week 3, 2023, in that game where they gave up 70 points to the Miami Dolphins. And then if you look at some of the individual matchups, Laremy Tunsil on one of the best pass rushers in the league, Nick Benito. Now, I think he was wearing a cast, and he complained about it after the game affecting him. But still, two pressures on 28 matchups, so Tunsil dominated him. Jonathan Cooper did not get a single pressure in 26 matchups against Josh Connerly, who, despite the hold that took away the McLaurin touchdown, which as a lineman, heavy lies the crown here, this is what happens, everyone will kill you for. But he was really, really good in pass pro. And then Sam Cosmi, one pressure on 55 pass blocks against the interior That's a really, really good interior.
Yeah, they're good at everything.
So you're starting to see this group ascend, come together. This is the planned five. They got to find a way to keep these guys intact going into next season because it could be a real strength for them.
So to me, one part plan, which was we know when our shots are going to be there, and we, you know, those are the ones you need to block up, right, to give the receiver time to make a move, et cetera. The other part is enough of the quick game that, and it was accessible quick stuff because it's one thing just to say, throw it quickly. Do you have somewhere to go? Does the read take you there? Does the play design leave something open almost automatically? It did a lot. But to me, it was the way they ran the ball. I did not expect that at all. I did not expect them to be able to run it as effectively, especially on the interior. I mean, they were shoving it on Denver for a decent amount. Again, it wasn't one of those Ravens where, you know, Derrick Henry has 160, some guy you never heard of has 55.
Ahead of the chains, man.
But it was ahead of the chain stuff. It was 4.5, 5.5 yards on first down consistently, and they were really, really good in that regard. Just nothing fancy either. It wasn't like super well-designed, great comeback, cutback counter, this, that, and the other. This was, to me, a lot of power football, and they ran it really, really well in that game.
Jay Gruden's going to join the show at 3 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on why Washington looked so much better on offense in this game, how much of that was a Terry McLaurin factor. But let's do this next. We'll open up the phones at 800-636-1067. Can you feel good about a loss yesterday? Is that the part of the season we're at now where they've lost 7 in a row and 8 of 9, and rather than coming in here being upset, I'm pretty happy with what I saw. I was entertained. I thought it was a good product. It was one of the more fun games to watch in the NFL this weekend. You played a 10-2 team, and oh, by the way, I know some of you won't agree with this, and that's fine. Because you lost, you moved up to number 6 in the draft order. So wins all over the place, in an L as far as I'm concerned. But what say you? 800-636-1067 is the number. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Tirico on the call. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. So I was at the stadium in the press box, being press box Paulson last night, Danny.
Oh, sure.
But it was brought to my attention by, 900 people that they couldn't say Marcus Mariota's name very well.
My goodness gracious.
What was going on there?
It sounds like one of those things where, and maybe this happened and I missed it, just the audio of it, but where Tirico or the play-by-play guy would go, and by the way, we talked to him this week, and it's actually Paulson, not Paulson. Like, somebody got a memo somewhere to do this. But Collinsworth, and to a degree Tirico, but it's really Collinsworth, was saying the T in Mariota like it was capitalized. Like it was emphasized. It was like the only bold letter in the entire name. For me, Mariota. And you're like, why? What? Like one time, okay, he said his name 64 times, and each time, 64 for 64, it was like the T was the most important letter in human history. Bizarre.
Can you feel good about yesterday's loss, even though it's 7 in a row and 8 of 9? Now, I am a believer in not all losses are the same. So when you get absolutely blown out of your own building by the Seahawks and by the Lions and you have no answers, and if they have 10 drives, they'll score 10 touchdowns because you can't make a tackle, you can't cover anybody. That's very different than when you play the 10-2 Denver Broncos and you take them to the brink. The amount of times this team got off the mat, too. Being that resilient at 3-8 is a tell that you care about your coach, this staff, that you are built with the right stuff. I'm talking about like a new snapper and a new kicker kicking a game-tying field goal to go to overtime at the Horn. I'm talking about how many times over. Like, they got to go drive and get a field goal. All right, here's 18 plays, 71 yards to end the game. It's 20-20. Oh, now they went down the field and scored a touchdown in overtime. Now it's over. Oh, Washington goes right down the field. Well, now you got tackled at the one, and it's fourth and goal, so now it's not going to work out. And then you score. Time and time and time again. And by the way, I don't know because I just haven't been able to listen, haven't heard one word all day, you know, what anyone's saying about this on air. But if there are people out there that are upset that they went for two, no. Try a new thing to care about this game. They 1,000% should have gone for two. That was 100% the correct decision by Dan Quinn. Playing to tie that game is useless. Playing to get even in that game and then put your defense back on the field so that a field goal loses you the game anyway would have been a joke. You're at home. You can end it there. You're 3-8, which is the whole point. That is the most obvious two-point conversion in this charade that's ever been. So I don't know if that's even been a take. I've seen a little bit of it online, but I'll just get ahead of that one real quick.
Yeah, I certainly don't have a problem going for it, especially because you're probably not getting the ball back. In other words, the best you can do there is tie, which isn't a great outcome for you in that moment, and you got a chance to win the game right there. Again, my default in general is to not go for two. I understand what the analytics are. I hate going for two unless I have zero time. I've mathematically eliminated from doing anything else.
But in that spot, going for two.
In that spot, I think I probably would have because I go, there's about 3 minutes left. I'm not getting the football back, and I'm basically saying, Denver, you have a great chance to go win it.
Well, it's not even – I don't even think you have to worry about what the Broncos would do. You're not playing for a tie. You're either going to win or lose. You're 3-8. This is not a game that's going to make or break your playoff chances. It's as simple as what would you make of playing this entire game and then just leaving the field with a tie? That makes no sense. So forget the Broncos for a second. There's 3 minutes left and you're probably going to lose. You didn't come here to tie. This thing's ending right here and right now, one way or the other.
I mean, for me, the entire calculus is what gives me the best chance to win, and that is that. Meaning sure. Going for it right there. Because, again, I do care about how much time's left on the clock, what the Broncos may or may not do. If it's, you know, if there was 8 minutes.
I care about that when I'm not 3-8. At 3-8, now it's literally a matter of we're not playing it. We've already run the most plays we've run since 2016 against the Cincinnati Bengals. We're not going to do this thing all night. Like we're not going to keep running guys out there and risking more injury. And, you know, in this basically preseason game, essentially, like you don't tie in the preseason. This is kind of the same deal. Let's go to the phones. 800-636-1067. Jay's in D.C. on Grant and Danny. Did you feel better watching that really entertaining game last night?
What's up, guys? I appreciate it. Yeah, I think all is right with the world because Derek finally took collard greens. You guys had to make a big deal out of it for some reason. But for all the black people, thank you. He took a terrible trade, but I do think that was an HR violation. I think his boss was out pressuring him to make that
trade.
I'm
not his boss. We're equals. But I will say it was the worst trade I've ever seen.
It was not a good one.
I've never seen a worse trade in my life. That was bad.
It was really bad. It was really bad. But I'm just going to give him a little bit of props. But, yeah, I loved the game yesterday. Like, this is how every game should be. It was perfect. Besides the Ben Center usage, who I'm disappointed in, I'm more excited about Post and Yankoff than him. Like, that was, like, the perfect game. If we can do that every week, we have really good plays. Everyone gets the ball, and just so happens we are 1 point less than the other team, I'm good to go.
Jay, I think Derek
appreciate
wants
you, dude,
to talk to you, so hang on a second. I will let everybody know that making the rounds last night at the game, the amount of people that had takes and thoughts on the Thanksgiving food draft.
There was a buzz.
Warmed my heart, so that's very good. Many of those people, by the way, many of them, told me that Darius made the worst trade in the history of the Thanksgiving Day food draft.
It's why you call, though.
It's why you pick up the phone.
Yep.
You have to make the call. When you think they're going to say no, you've got to just give it a whirl.
You have to ask.
And I didn't remember this, but people were like name-checking trades Ryan's made over the last couple of years that he's now off the hook. But the amount of just absolute, I don't know if Darius's ears were ringing last night, people coming up to me to just kill him at the game. It was a bountiful amount. It was a tough trade for old Darius. But he responded with an okay plate. If you missed any part of the very, very popular Thanksgiving food draft on Grant and Danny, you can grab that podcast wherever you get your audio. Let's go to Sean in Falls Church. What's up, Sean? How are you?
Doing well, guys. Appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, buddy.
I was definitely on Danny's side here with the pronunciation of the name. It felt very much so Harry Potter Hermione-esque, where it's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
Leviosa.
Leviosa, yes. It was,
oh, we
it was
were
Mariota,
doing a
not,
WNBC.
Not
do it just like Amos does, WNBC. That's what it was doing. Yeah. So bad.
I couldn't get past it. It was every single time they mentioned him, it was horrible. But feel better about the game. The season still feels a little suspect, but the season felt like the referees last night. They were a little I don't know if they were feeling a Thanksgiving hangover, but they felt a little suspect as well.
Oh my gosh. So, look, there were some calls that weren't very good. I just always think any kind of complaining about the referees looks to me like it's childish and ridiculous, and I'm not going to generally waste a lot of time with that. Here's what I will say. The running of the game, the managing of the game by that crew was terrible. Here's how bad it was. They should be on a call with their union or the league or whoever's in charge of dictating refereeing and how things are done. On a national spotlight game with the 20-some million people watching, with the country tuned in last night, it wasn't up to the standard. It did not look right. You're saying it's second down, a third down when it's clearly second down and the chains are wrong, so now you've got to stop play to do that. There was a very, very, very obvious play that they let go, only to then have corrected basically after the next snap. Like at the line of scrimmage when the Broncos threw a red flag. I'm trying to remember what the play was late in the game.
Well, so Mariota was down.
That's what it was. Yes.
And he
gets up.
The way he got down was he was tripped.
Yes.
Like the tripping occurred. They couldn't get that, missed that.
That call.
So then, he was clearly down. So something, it's one of the things I would say in basketball, like the guy jumped up with the ball and it came down, he had the ball, but everyone's hands were in there. Something happened. You can't just let that go. Either a foul or a jump ball or something. So either it's a trip or a sack, and they called neither. And finally, Peyton's got to drop the flag and be like, he's down back there, dude. There was contact. Now, don't worry about the kind of contact it was, but he was down back there, and they figured that part out.
Totally. The other thing, though, is that pregame, this was noticeable in-house, and I don't know watching at home if you could tell this, but whoever the head referee was, the umpire that was making the announcements, he would turn on the mic mid-play a bunch during the game. So, like, over the press box, we have his mic blaring. So anytime it goes on, you just hear the natural sound and the whistles and the thumping of pads or whatever.
Interesting.
And so it was as if, I don't know, like a pocket dial, but like he would just, like he had his finger on the mic or something and he kept tapping it, but you could hear him yelling just throughout the night. It was as if, I was just like, what is this guy's deal? He was having a really, really rough night is what I'm going to say. I thought the entire crew did. And in a national spotlight, someone's got to answer to that today. Not only some missed calls. I know they hated the intentional grounding call on the NBC telecast on Marcus Mariota on the final drive.
Yep.
I actually didn't think that was a bad call, but according to the rules expert, and those guys are wrong as much as they're right a lot of the time, but the rules expert, who should know the rules certainly better than I do, said if you're a receiver outside the numbers and the ball sails over your head, doesn't really matter how far over your head or how far out of bounds, that's now legal. And that's what happened. Terry falls down. He's outside the numbers. Mariota throws it 8,000 miles past him, clearly because he's about to get sacked. And according to the rules expert, it shouldn't have been intentional grounding.
Well, by that same standard, there was a play where I think
Mariota threw
a ball to sort of the right corner, and Lane broke the other way. If that's the standard for intentional grounding, then that was.
Right.
But that was clearly, to me, a miscommunication. He thought he was going right, and he went left. I don't know who was right or wrong. That's not important. But there's no receiver in the area, so is that grounding too?
Or at the end of the game, when they're throwing into the end zone, he's chucking it through the uprights 50 feet over Terry's head in the back of the end zone. Why is that any different than the one that you called?
Right.
And I'm not saying that should have been called.
I think none of them should have been.
Exactly. So, yeah, I just thought in general the crew's legislation of the action was terrible. They had very little feel, and all of their meetings went too long. It was just, it was rough to watch. Dave in Centerville, you're on Grant and Danny. How'd you feel about the Commanders losing a seventh straight but taking the Broncos to the brink?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you guys. I think you can feel good about it. I mean, at the end of the day, we improved our draft stock. We're not in the playoffs by any means at this point. And I think you saw a lot of good bright spots from, you know, the team, and we've gone embarrassed so many times on prime time. It's nice to go out there, compete, and look like a healthier version of what we could have been this season.
Totally.
But one thing that I want to specifically like point out, one player, he got killed a lot because of the schedule and the players that he faced at the beginning of the season. But Josh Connerly really seems like he's turning into a solid tackle and hopefully something more than that. It was kind of trial by fire to start this season, playing Micah, Max, all the Giants guys, and yesterday against the best defense in the league, top three pass rush. I think he had 55 pass snaps, and he allowed one pressure. He had that hold at the end, but, you know, we ended up scoring anyways. But I think it's really nice to see him, because a lot of people, NFL and Commanders fans, were blasting him to begin the season. He's a bust, this and this. He's turned out to be pretty solid since then. So
here, here.
Thanks, Mike.
I think there's a lot to take away from what was a really good phone call, but most notably, relax a little bit in the early weeks with these young kids playing positions where they're on an island, corner, tackle, what have you. And I don't feel bad about, I actually said after one of the early games, might have been Green Bay, let's sit him down, give him a couple week reset here with Max Crosby or whoever it was coming to town.
Yeah, it was Crosby the next week.
Play Wiley, and, you know, let's let him get him back out there in 2 or 3 weeks. Let's just reboot him a little bit. I still don't think that would have been a bad idea. But at no point did I, and I don't think most of the fan base, I don't know that anybody really worried about him long term. Like, if you watch him, the way he moves at his size with his footwork, he's got this baby face. He's very young. I mean, extremely young. This is what it looks like for a tackle that turns into a really good player. And I think they were always very confident. Remember, Cliff wrote the note and like put it on Dan's desk.
Yeah, he went full draft day on it.
Make sure you draft this guy. But you're right. He is coming to his own. He's playing a lot better. Still ups and downs. There's no doubt. There's going to be a bad game probably in the next five. But this is the trajectory that's reasonable to get to a point where you have a really, really good answer over the long haul, John Jansen-like right tackle.
Yeah, this is an end of round one, beginning of round two caliber player, which means there's still a little bit of raw clay there, right? The guys that are the top 10 finished products who are going to walk in and be Pro Bowlers from week number one, yeah, they went in the top 10. The guys that are in this range, it takes a minute, and there's still some faders that have to be turned up, but I think they will be. I really like him.
Jay Gruden at 3, Leonard Skinner tickets at 4. We'll give out some game balls and gassers next on Grant and Danny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina DeAnna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of a Crime House Original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Play of the night for the Commanders and the catch of the season for Washington, maybe in the NFL. Treylon Burks, one-handed, one of those suction catches where the ball just stops moving. It's like you pluck it out of the sky as it's going over your head, overthrown, with the hand and the finger, by the way, that was just surgically repaired.
That's the big part of it to me. So it's not quite the Beckham catch in terms of the angle. Where you know, he leaned straight back behind him and it was going to the ground. But the degree of difficulty is right there because, as you said, a defender's draped on him, pulling him in the opposite direction, and he's using his surgically repaired 20 days ago taped together fingers as he's making that catch. That's one of the greatest catches I've ever seen.
Game ball for that catch for Treylon Burks. Let me get another game ball. Zach Ertz, 10 for 106. Let me get another game ball. Terry McLaurin, how different is this when he's cooking? 7 for 96 and a touchdown. Let me get another game ball. I know it's funny to say this. Take the pick out of the equation for Mariota, which was a bad play. Said he was trying to throw it away. I believe him, but he didn't. And he threw it to a defender in the red zone, which was terrible. But he throws for 294. He runs for 55. He gave him a chance. Give me another game ball. Mikey Sanders still's pretty good when he's playing outside, it seems like. Maybe we should just keep doing more of that. Let's have him play outside and stop trying to make fetch happen. Inside. Give me one more game ball. I thought Preston Smith had his best game defensively. Lived in the backfield, some pressures, some contact of Bo Nix, who was pretty meh to me. What'd you think of Bo Nix in this game?
Solid. Like, nothing
he made
crazy.
A couple of awesome plays.
Yeah.
But he also just leaves a lot on the field. The pick to Bobby Wagner was terrible.
Was pretty horrendous. Yeah, he moves around so well, and like part of that is the charm. The thing that I love the most is plays that aren't there. Maybe you could have made one before. Like, you could have delivered the ball on time, maybe. I can't see that necessarily on a given play. But you know, I love watching his athleticism. And I watch him moving around, some of those throws on the run where it looks like something's dead and then it's not. So it's fine, but nothing world-beating.
I don't think this is obviously an A or B game for him. But even still, he's just not on the level of from his own draft class. Like, it's Jaden Daniels and Drake May head and shoulders above him. I would say he and Caleb Williams are maybe in their own tier behind those guys. Williams is still just misses too many throws. I thought he stunk in their big win with the great running game against the Eagles the other day. And then another tier down is like Penix, and then another tier down is McCarthy. I don't know if I'm forgetting anyone, but that's kind of
no, that's
how
the
I
group,
would
yeah.
tier those guys.
Gasser for me. One day. Maybe it's next season. Maybe it's never. We'll get timeouts right, Dan Quinn. One day. Second quarter. Can't figure out the personnel, burn timeout with, you know, 10 minutes and 40 seconds to spare in that second quarter. It's a process thing for me. It's either right or it's incorrect and it's unacceptable, and we continue to have it be unacceptable.
Game balls, gassers on Grant and Danny. You can send us yours at Grant H. Paulson for me. Running game was pretty good. Rodriguez, you mentioned, stayed ahead of the chains. Jeremy McNichols makes plays for them. He's had a very good season, 6 for 30. Mariota. I'm sorry. He checked into a run on like a third and long. Might have been a third and 11.
Third and 13, I think, yeah.
13, that's what it was. And he checks into a run, and then McNichols makes a guy miss at the line of scrimmage, gets 16 to keep a drive going, which was impressive. And Bill didn't get a lot of work. Considering they had 85 plays, he only had 4 carries. But Bill had a jump cut for 12. He'll be on the show tomorrow. That was his best run in weeks. It looked like Bill from September and camp when everybody was really excited. man, was that good to see. Because whatever that vision thing was we talked about early in the year, where all of a sudden instead of plowing into the pile in front of you for one or two, you just make a cut and you get 12. He did that again. I like their running game overall. And they got their weapons involved in the passing game. It's got to be McLaurin, Ertz, and Debo, and it certainly was. Those guys combined for 22 catches and almost 275 yards.
And Mariota had a great pull on a read option keeper. He is so excellent at that.
He's the best.
He may be the best I've ever seen at it. I mean, there are other guys that were good at it, you know, the pull on the read option or whatever. There's something about the way that he kind of does. He keeps the fake going, but gets his feet ready so he's not flat-footed when he starts running, if that makes any sense, when he's going to keep it. Because you're convinced the running back has it. The defender is diving down the left side of the line of scrimmage. Yes.
He got me on that because McNichols, I think it was, maybe Rodriguez, like plows into the line and gets tackled. I was the cameraman for FS1.
I'm telling you.
Big noon kickoff. I was like watching the running back and I'm like, oh, snap, he's got it.
Whereas other guys, when they do it, you can still have, you know, have good ball handling and make the fake nice, but you then, okay, now I'm going to start running. There's something about the way that he does it where his feet are set and he's already gone. He's already got two or three steps and he's much closer to top speed when he whipped around. That left end for, I think, was like 15 yards.
That's my QB2 next year.
There it is.
I'm bringing him back to be Jaden's backup. If Jacoby Brissett isn't willing to have me. If Jacoby's not willing to have me, Marcus will be my QB2 next year. I kid, but I do love Jacoby Brissett. Jay Gruden joins us next on Grant and Danny. Remember, at 4 o'clock, we've got those Leonard Skinner tickets on the Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.